Well, good morning. It is a joy to be here with all these teachers, all these people that are like-minded and have the same goals, a lot of the same goals. Now, this is entitled Schools of Character, and you might be thinking, an inspirational speech with words like resilience and integrity. Maybe somebody crying over a touching story about a second grader sharing their chicken nuggets with somebody who forgot. And might do that. But there will also be some sarcasm and educational guilt trips and at least one reference to YouTube. So this is a very large subject. And as I thought about this subject, there are so many different ways you can go with it, and I came to the belief that I'm going to basically talk about things from my perspective and my experience. And so that's where I'm going to go. And you might have some completely different ideas about where this talk should go. And you might be completely right, but I have to speak from my experience because you didn't send me any emails or anything about how to do it. So first, though, I have a question for you. How many of you remember learning to ride a bike? Remember that? I guess you can all ride a bike. I won't ask you that. Some people don't know how. It's fine if you don't. I'm sorry for you, but it's fine. But how old were you when you learned to ride a bike? Really? Okay. Five? Yeah. Okay, I was probably about that age. And how many of you have taught somebody how to ride a bike? Maybe a younger sibling or something, you've done that, or a child of your own or something, yeah? So what do you consider to be acceptable? What would you look for if you're going to teach somebody to ride a bike? What would you want? You want them to have a helmet on, and knee pads, maybe goggles, safety, thick padded gloves, flat surface. Level ground, appropriately sized bike, yes. Willingness. Yes, so important. I did try to teach somebody who was not quite willing once, and it did not go well. It was a mess. I'm not certain how old I was when I learned to ride a bike, but I do remember it very well. I remember the color of the bike. It was blue. It was a small bike. My dad had a bike. It was the only bike we had in our family, but it was a nice big, it wasn't that big, but it was a 10-speed bike with, the ram horn handlebars and little skinny wheels. And there was no way I could ride that thing. I could straddle the bar, but couldn't reach the pedal. But our neighbor had a little blue bike. And so I visit them and I learned to ride at their place. And it was a good place to learn to ride, I thought, because they had a long hill that sloped down to the road. And you could just get on there and you could just coast down the road. None of that bothersome pedaling thing. You just got your momentum up. And then you had to learn to stop right away, too, because, there might be traffic coming. So a very safe place. I mean, just excellent place to learn to ride a bike. And it worked fine for me. And the way you think about acceptable risk affects a little bit the way you think about your school, too, and culture and building character. So when we think about character development, we might disagree on some things, like what's acceptable risk or what is what's safe and what's unsafe and what promotes things. I think an interesting discussion to have is how much danger is acceptable in your life. We're drawn to something that's dangerous. I think boys maybe more than girls, but I think girls are too. That's why boys like hunting. Do you know that hunting is dangerous? Because you have something that would kill something. You're holding something or something that will kill. So that's part of what really attracts boys to hunting. How does that apply to character development? It does if we keep going. So first of all, academics really matter when we're talking about character development was talking with Doug this morning. His topic is knowledge. It's about knowledge. He said, you're probably going to say that knowledge doesn't matter, and I'm going to say that knowledge does. Well, it's not quite what I'm going to say, but academics really do matter. You're here to, you're teaching school to actually teach them something. You're teaching them science and history and math and English and how to talk right, you know. And those things are all important. It opens up the world for them. But you know what? Their speed at doing flashcards and their ability to do long division is not going to help them solve a dispute on the class, on the playground. And it's not going to help them resolve a dispute over who was caught or who left the base first or things like that. And we are raising future adults here. We're not just raising test takers or diploma earners, we're raising people that are going to be dealing with other people. And that is one of the huge things that we teach in school, is how to relate to other people, how to read other people, how to look at their faces and tell, oh, what I said hurts you. Or, yeah, they're actually enjoying what you're saying, or things like that. Now, we're living in a world where I think kindness is rather underrated in politics, certainly. Empathy seems to be optional. And YouTube entertainers can make more money in an afternoon destroying a new vehicle than you will make in a lifetime of teaching school. You know, priorities are a little bit upside down, I think. So what does a school of character look like? Well, it's not just hanging a motivational poster in the hallway and calling it a day. Teamwork makes the dream work. Wonderful poster. I was glad to see a bunch of good posters here. And I love good posters, by the way. If posters work, that little attitude is everything poster that you all have, that would have solved all your problems already. But a school of character, number one, models good behavior instead of just talking or lecturing about it. Now, who is modeling this behavior? I don't love the word modeling. I did appreciate that Brother Jacob used it this morning already, so that's good. But I couldn't actually think of another word that fit exactly. You could say illustrate or exemplify or whatever. But models good behavior. Well, obviously, who does? In a great school, who models good behavior? Any ideas? Or the teacher does. Excellent. Perfect answer. The teacher does. Anybody else? Just the teacher is right. The teacher is always right. You start with the teacher, though. That's so important. The teacher really sets the tone.
Hopefully students can model good behavior as well.
Yes. Yes. You know, that's one of the huge benefits of high school, is when you have older students who are glad to be there and they are being a good example. It's more powerful even than the teacher at some level. So we did a little bit, but you're welcome. Glad to have you here, Ryan. So, you know, in a great school, it is, the students are so important at modeling this behavior. Specifically the high school students. Sometimes we can have a school, and I've heard stories of schools that have been going for a long time, and they've had good structure in place. They have good rules. They know where they're going. And yet, there's they've kind of plateaued, like was mentioned a little bit. And the students are dishonest, and there's things going on behind the teacher's back. And terrible things. There's terrible stories out of some of our schools of things that go on. You can have good rules and good vision, and if you don't, there can still be bad things going on, I'm just saying. So models good behavior, celebrates kindness, remembering birthdays, common and uncommon courtesy, watching out for those who are outside of your age group. I really like to see that happening. I'm going to talk more about that later. Encourages reflection and discussion and not just memorization. So not just absorbing the data, but actually regurgitating it. Although that is a word that gives me an unpleasant word picture, you know. But yet, makes you think a little bit. Make space for failure, forgiveness, resetting, and starting over. Is school a place for failure? I'm going to make the point this morning that school is should be a safe place to fail. And I have seen students who had no trouble in school, who just never learned to fail. And they struggled in life. It's also in the everyday moments. It's how a teacher handles a wrong answer with grace. No matter the how unusual the answer, there is a way to respond with kindness. And how a student owns up to a mistake instead of blaming their siblings or something else or their circumstances or my dog ate my whatever. So start with relationships, first of all, I think. I like to see students holding the door open, even if they're not ordered to do that, and apologizing for their mistakes. And this does include teachers apologizing to students. It doesn't kill your authority to do that. It just proves we're human. And I've had to do that in some very embarrassing ways sometimes. I'm going to tell you, I'll turn off the recorder here and tell you one, and that is I used to be fairly competitive playing volleyball. And now I'm a little bit of a joke playing volleyball. I still play a little bit. But I remember different times when, and we didn't play confess for net. So they would ask, were you in the net? And no, I wasn't. Well, maybe I was, actually. And there was a couple times where I had to go back and say, actually, that was a lie. I did touch net just a tiny little bit, but I did touch it. I could feel it on my sleeve or something. So embarrassing to do that. It's embarrassing for me to tell you this, but it actually was good for me to do that, and it was good for them to hear me do it, I think. Okay, so what? Also, understand that your students are facing different things, the stages that they're going through in their life. The husky, overgrown, insecure boy needs to realize that he's not allowed to bully just because he's older. And the attractive, popular girl, high school girl, needs to realize that as well. And all of us need to realize that they have feelings too. The bully has feelings. And there's a reason he acts that way. So if we can understand that, that's part of what helps build schools of character. What character qualities do our students need and do we develop? So I have the three R's. The three R's, and they're not the three R's that we usually think of. But the first one is respect. Now, I think it's so important to understand, and this was mentioned this morning, so I'm not going to beat this point too much. It's so important to understand that we're made in the image of God, and God does not make trash humans. Despite what politicians might say. God does not make trash humans. We all need to be respected and respect others. And children have a longing to matter to someone. And adults do too. But that's why children may tell you a long, windy story. Because they want to know if you care enough to listen. And they also want to impress you with their exploits. And that's why they do it. You know, all of us have our own prejudices, and some of them are reasonable prejudices, and some of them are just prejudices. It's just the way we were raised. Now, I volunteer at a prison in Oregon, and a number of years ago, so we have a Bible study there twice a month. A number of years ago, I was there by myself one evening, and this is a pretty interesting prison. It's medium security, and there's prisoners from all, they integrated this particular prison years ago, so there's people in our study group that have a release date of 2,250. They have serious crimes. And so it can be interesting. But anyway, I was there, and there was a number of new guys coming through the line. I was standing at the door. I was by myself that time. And I was shaking hands with people and say, welcome to our Bible study, and good to see you back. And this fellow came through the door, and I reached out to shake his hand and look at his name tag. And I kind of froze just a little bit, because this was a man who had obviously taken quite a few steps down the road of transitioning to being a woman. And you could see the natural features were still a little bit evident in his face, but I just say the effect was grotesque to me. And I just froze. There was such a level of, I'll just say, loathing kind of in my soul that came out. And I really had to, you know, it was just half a second. And then I did feel Christ speaking to me that this is actually a lost soul who wants to come to our Bible study. Welcome, Matthew. Glad to have you here. And we had a very interesting relationship from there on. It's actually kind of a long story. But I did not realize how that prejudice affected me. Now, you might say, and people have said, that's a good prejudice. But there is never a reason to show hatred to anybody, no matter their choices. Now, our students come to us with all kinds of prejudices too. They have prejudices about age. Those that are younger than them are not valued as highly. Those that are older are valued more highly. It's just the way they think. Typically, that's the way they think. They have prejudices about gender, especially at certain ages. And the prejudices change as you get older, but prejudice is not the right word. Predispositions, biases, whatever. And those are not wrong either. It's just part of, they're going to relate differently to these situations. Okay. Specifically thinking about the fact of younger students looking up, actually literally looking up to older students. Now, there's a psychological reason for that psychologists have talked about, that the taller you are, the more income you make. Have you all seen those studies? Kind of interesting. Yeah. We should maybe have you all stand up and see who's tallest.
It's not working.
Well, in the broader society, when they panel, you know, tens of thousands of people, they see this interesting little data point. But it's true to you. You probably have a little bit of that. If you were a scenario that people have used, is if you were lost, and you were driving through town, and you can't find this, you can't find something, I don't know, whatever you're looking for, and you see a pickup basketball game of boys playing on the side, you're going to stop and ask for directions. Who are you going to ask? Well, most of you, if you're honest, you would say the tallest one. It's just that bias that we have. It's not wrong, it's not right necessarily, it's just what it is. He might be the new kid on the block. He might not know anything about town, you know. But you're probably going to ask him. Maybe not. Maybe you've asked the one that's closest to you. So I'm just saying that in school, we're dealing with that, and we push back against those biases and make sure that people understand, yeah, we have all those things, but we are not allowed to treat people with disrespect because of those biases. At the same time, we should teach respect for age. That's another good thing. You know, our students need to have empathy more than they need to understand exponents. They need to be able to put themselves in others' shoes. Now, we've all had students who are brilliant on paper, but they can't work in a group without getting all emotionally distressed and getting into lots of conflict. Or we have probably had students whose insecurities make them point out other people's faults while they ignore their own. And learning to deal with that particular student can be difficult, and getting them to relate well with each other. So there's respect. The second R is responsibility. We are responsible for our actions, period. We are also responsible for, to some extent, for the effect of our actions on others, at least to some extent. You know, so many currents, so many winds that tug and pull at us through childhood. But in the end, we're responsible for our choices. There are all kinds of difficult situations with children who have trauma and deep hurts, make our hearts ache when we hear the stories. And we have to show mercy and grace. But in the end, they're responsible for their choices. And you know how we know that? It's because we can't make them for them. They actually have to choose. And there's so many times that I've had a student who is just wavering right here. And I thought, I want to make your choice for you, because I know which way you should go. And you cannot do that. They actually have to make that choice themselves. So responsibility for their actions. And that can take the form of all kinds of things, how you make them responsible to clean up their mess, or things like that. Okay, resilience is the third R. Resilience, I think this is an area that we might be slipping as a society, frankly, because our lives are just getting softer and easier. And especially, we live out west, and you know, we drive back here once in a while. You know what? If I tried to take my family and shove them into a little box pulled by horses and trot back here for a vacation, it would never happen. And we would just all die. We would just all die on the way. We're not that tough anymore. And I think maybe that physical aspect of our softer lives is also bleeding over into our just mental and emotional stamina too, to some extent. You know, a productive life really does still involve a lot of hard work. If we shun hard work, we give ourselves an out every time that we face it. Every time we don't feel 100% fit, maybe, not quite feel like I can do that. We're missing out on a lot of life. There was a great athlete who was asked at the end of his career how he became so successful, and he answered that he determined early on to cut out the things that did not contribute to his sport. He did not go golfing, and he did not live the extravagant lifestyle that some of his colleagues did. He spent his time becoming better at his sport. One of his inspirations came from his English teacher, who had told him when he was in 5th or 6th or 7th grade, I don't remember exactly. He said, "Don't rest in the middle, rest at the end. Don't stop and lose momentum. Wait till you're done and then rest." And he decided to do that with his career. And he was very successful in his career. And he said that this was very helpful advice when dealing with an injury. There are a lot of days when you can rest and recover from an injury. But today is not one of those days. Today, I have to get up and play. Well, that's the world of sports, of pro sports. That's not what we're called to, I believe, as a people. But the Bible takes illustrations from sports, and so I like that picture of resilience there. And this particular one, there's a story of him. He was a basketball player, having a terrible injury close to the end of a game. An injury that he could just barely walk, barely stand upright, but he got fouled very hard right at the end of the game, and, well, they wanted to take him out. He said, "No, I've got to shoot my free throws." And the other players and the people in the crowd who knew what this injury was like could not believe. They watched with open mouths as he walked to the line and shot his two free throws. And then he was willing to be taken out of the game. So that resilience is a good thing. Now, as teachers, we come to school and we expect our day to go fairly well, and we hope it goes well. Every day, mostly. But there are days we don't feel well. We don't feel great. Our workload is crushing us. There's a week of revival meetings, which of course are wonderful. But you go every night on those things. And every night is full then. And all you want to do today is just survive. I just need to survive. I've got a little bit of a cold. I've got allergies. I don't actually want to be here today. And what do you do in that situation? I like the rule for if you come on a scene of an accident and you're not sure what to do, do you know what the first rule is besides call 911? It's to do no harm. So remember that. When you're having a bad day, just chill a little bit. Do no harm. I have not always followed that. It's not been... I don't really want to go there, actually. So. Okay, and here's a point, too, I have in my outline. That failure is vital in development. School needs to be a safe place to fail. I'm not going to ask if you raise your hands if you agree with that. Because you might not, and that's fine. But I have seen students, like I mentioned, students who are so talented that they were never pushed. And you know, there's an old saying or idea that says, your B students will run the gas station, the A students will pump the gas, and the C students will own the station. And there is a very interesting correlation so many times in real life that the students who struggle in school, and they just barely pass, they go on and do very well in life. For that reason, I don't consider dyslexia to be that much of a handicap. It can be, depending on the circumstances. You know what? You could take that thing and just totally take that statement out of context. But I have seen so many people do really, really well with their life, with certain things in their life like that make learning difficult. So I think failure is vital in development. And I want to say, too, a safe place to fail, where there's not these massive repercussions if they fail. There's just accountability. It's like, oh, that was a mistake. We have to fix that. It's one of the things I learned in construction work as well. How many of you have done some construction work? What do you do when you put a wall together wrong? You nail a wall together wrong.
Cut it apart and start over.
That's it! Just do that. I know if you look at that, all this time wasted. No, you're going to waste so much more time trying to cover it up and make it look like it's plumb by tilting this wall a little bit. Just take it all apart and fix it. That is one of the biggest things that one of my bosses told me. Like, if it was almost good enough, he would always say, just tear it apart. Just tear it apart. Let's fix it. Fix it right. You learn that from failure. Now, my second point here that is very closely tied is that success is vital in development. If you never taste success, it's such a depressing way to live your life. If you go to school expecting to fail. So that's part of learning resilience, when you work and work and work at something and you are successful. So it's very important that you see that in your students, that you give them that opportunity. Okay, roll on here. I was determined to actually be done early so you could have time to sit and drink coffee and converse with each other. So we're going to keep moving here. So this is where we come in. Now, teachers, the good news and the bad news in your classroom is that you are the curriculum here when it comes to character development. It doesn't matter how many rules or guidelines we hand out or how many carefully arranged speeches you have and how perfect your devotions are and how good your room decor is and all that. If you are not modeling this behavior, it's just background noise. And they're going to see it as such. Just kind of interesting, but doesn't mean anything. They're watching you, not just how you teach, but how you respond to life, how you respond to hitting a sad little pop-up to the pitcher in softball. Isn't that a soul-crushing situation right there? How you talk about other students or teachers in the hallway, behind their backs. How you drive. I can almost sweat when I think about that situation. I'm not even going to tell a story. I have some awful stories of being young. I'll tell you my worst. I would like to shut the recorder off for this one. My absolute low point as a teacher was 1 year I was taking my students on a hike. There was a nice cave that we could hike into, and then we could explore this cave. Wonderful. And I put them all in the back of my pickup, and driving out to this place where we were going to hike. And they were kind of being a little bit careless on the back, the way they were sitting. And so I punched the gas to teach them to, you know, hold on. And one of them fell off while I was going pretty fast. And I remember just looking back in the mirror and seeing her flipping. And just the absolute sickness that I felt. Terrible, terrible feeling. I can barely talk about it right now. But, you know, The parents were gracious. She had to go to the, rushed her in to urgent care. It was a mess. Just say it was a mess. They could have fired me right there. Maybe they should have. I would have quit teaching school and become a rich farmer and just think my life would be like. But, you know, they showed me mercy there. And, yeah. So let's move on. More pleasant things here. But they are watching you. They're watching you how you handle the copier being jammed again, because, you know, that can be a spiritual test. And how you handle mornings. I don't know if you're a morning person or not, but as near as I can tell, in pretty much all of our schools, our school day starts in the morning. That's when you first interact with your students. And so it's great if you learn to handle mornings well. Every sigh, they notice it. Every side eye. Every smile. I had one student tell me, after I taught her for a few years, actually, that all I had to do to ruin her day was to roll my eyes at her. Well, I think that was maybe just a plenty oversensitive. But it was good for me to hear that and to realize that the things that I did made more of an impact on than I thought they did, actually. And that she cared about what I was doing, the things that I did. I think that's more true for girls than boys, but I know it's true for boys as well. Actually, had an interesting conversation once with a group of high school girls, and they were talking about the difference between boys and girls, and they said, what's the difference? And I said, well, what is the difference? Like, if the boys had to be girls for a week, what would they learn? And they said, the girl said, well, that you overthink everything. Really? I don't know if that's true or not. No way of knowing, but it was interesting for me. They're seeing how you, and you're modeling all kinds of things. You're modeling patience. I like the quote that says, I just had my patience tested. I'm negative. I've had days like that for sure. It's kind of been a joke at our school where our teachers get together to pray. It's not anymore as much. I've grown out of it. But for a while, I was like, don't pray for patience, please. Just pray for a good day. They see how we model grace. Are we teaching gracefully? Do we have to say, I told you so, when something doesn't work out for them? Or can we just say, that was identified early on as a likely outcome. Slightly more gracious. Maybe not, I don't know. Being accountable. Do they see us being accountable to the school board? And being honest. If you're truly honest, really nothing else matters, is the quote. And also, if you're not honest, nothing else really matters too. And sometimes they see us how to have a full emotional breakdown in front of the classroom with some dignity. Sometimes they see that as well. You know, character isn't taught very much. Usually it's caught. It's caught from us as teachers, it's caught from their parents, and it's caught from the older students. They're catching it from you. Do we have a Christian school? I think all of us are teaching probably at Christian schools. And what makes a school Christian? That's another discussion that we could have, talking about character. We teach so much more by the person we are than by the things that we say. Do they see us enjoying life and enjoying what we're doing? Now, sometimes the translation of what we say or mean looks very difficult or very different when a student attempts to implement what you're teaching them. And that's always interesting to me. A teacher once talked to a young student about being kind. You need to work on being more kind. Show more charity. Here, charity. And he or she later heard this student say that, I would like to insult you, but I'm working on kindness. And one of my favorite stories, I'm sorry if you've heard me say it already, but I had an absolutely wonderful student, great connection with him, and he was very competitive in school, in sports, and he was too competitive, frankly. He would come down hard on his lesser talented teammates and classmates, and they were actually getting a little weary of him being so hard on them in softball specifically. And I mentioned it to him. You know what? You are a really good athlete here, and you're playing with people who are not. They're not as big as you. They can't hit as hard as you. So if you can just calm down a little bit about what you're demanding from them. I love that you play with passion. That's great. But just be a little kinder. Okay? They make a mistake. They don't like the fact that they made a mistake. Tell them, good try. It'll be encouraging. So, oh yeah, he's very, very willing to do that. So we're out playing softball same week, I think. And somebody hit a really hard line drive out to center field, and he fielded the ball expertly and hurled it to second baseman missed it, and it rolled past first base too, and first baseman missed it as well, and they trundled after it and hurled it to third base. It was just a complete debacle, and I just remember him running in from the outfield just, guys, I can't do it all by myself. Good try. And it just tickled me so much. He was actually trying to implement this. Another thing I just had recently with a student on a Bible quiz, the question was asked, how do we wash someone else's feet? And the lesson was on communion and feet washing. And his answer was, that he wrote in there, was with a power washer. And I knew this boy. He was not trying to be funny. But I think the concept that he was thinking of was going the extra mile to help somebody. And the image immediately of thrumming washers and feet washing service and all that, it just is grotesque. But But this was actually him trying to come up with a good answer. I really liked it. Now, these things are silly sometimes, but they are the seeds of character, at least in some cases. Now, character education is not separate from academics. The best classrooms integrate that without even trying. So there's group work where you have to collaborate. You have to work together. It's not just my idea that we're using. We're using different people's ideas and getting together. There's communication. What do you mean by this? There's patience. Maybe some therapy sometimes. But all that, working together, is one of the big reasons we have school. There's science labs that we work together, and we need to use honesty, we need to observe carefully, and we have to take responsibility. If you mix the wrong chemicals, you make a mess, you have to clean it up. And literature. I love literature for teaching character, because you can talk about other stories and other people's experiences in life. And how many of you know the story, by the way, of it's called The Lady or the Tiger? The Lady or the Tiger. Okay, excellent story in literature. And I don't know if that, I think it teaches character. It makes you think, it puts you in somebody else's mind.
My
so well.
Always get upset.
They get upset with the story. It's an excellent story, yes. Yeah, wonderful story. Okay. I remember the first time I read that story, I just couldn't believe this is the ending. Right. Okay. Literature is wonderful, and math is one of the things that builds perseverance and honesty. I really love math. And all this is dependent a lot on whether or not the students trust their teacher. So when the students trust their teacher, their brains open up, and curiosity activates, and defenses go down. Relationships build results in this case. Okay, so a few things here, finally, to get a little bit more practical. So number one, a few things here, I think I have six or seven, is we're going to try to model character. That's really the big thing. You could just remember that, be wonderful. Model character. The teacher needs to model character. So just talk about the teacher, first of all. We have to say thank you. We have to say good morning. We have to be cheerful. We have to be joyful about life. You know, positivity is catching. Negativity is even more so. Negativity is 100% effective. Positivity is like 30%. But just go with it. Go with being positive. It is powerful. Speak positively. Say thank you, admit it when you're wrong, be human, be joyful about life, speak positively about the other staff and about the other teachers, reverence the school board, even when you don't feel like it, possibly, hold the parents in high esteem, and don't take yourself too seriously. Take your job seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. Humor is the shock absorber of life. Not everything is funny. Well, lots of things are, actually. And I'm not just talking about being funny, but just not being offended. Having a sense of humor is involved with that. What's the verse on that? Great peace have those that love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. I've thought about that verse over and over. And grow a thick skin and a soft heart. The second point here is to make it visible. Highlight small moments of kindness. Enlist older students. Oh no, that was another point. So highlight small moments of kindness. Use bulletin boards and posters. Like teamwork makes the dream work. And put good quotes on the board. I love to put good quotes on the board every couple days or at the beginning of the week. And I like to see my students. Every once in a while, I see that my students have written down a quote or something like that. You know, my favorite quote. Actually, I'm not going to tell you my favorite quote. You'd never take me seriously if I told you that one. So use stories. There's a great story about John Wesley that I really love. And it's about him preaching in England. I think it was John Wesley. and he was preaching to coal miners, and they became very upset at his teaching. And they came to his house, and they grabbed him, and stripped him, and tarred and feathered him, and rode him on a rail. And, well, that's the end of that preacher. But you know, Monday morning, when they're trudging to their coal mine, in the dark and feeling bleary from drink and their excesses of the weekend, here was John Wesley preaching. He was raw from the tar that they had spread on him. And he was preaching a message of love. And it was very effective because they saw it in action. Visible story. The third point here is to use or to embed it. Don't treat it as something extra, but make it part of the fabric of your school. Teach common and uncommon courtesy. And I don't know, I think different cultures are different. In the particular culture that I am in right now, it seems like it takes an extra energy at school. And so we have just said, I decided, you know what, I'm going to actually require my students to do this. I like when you say good morning to me in the morning. So you come in, you say good morning to me, and not just me, everybody in our class. So you say, good morning, Becca, and good morning, Charlene, and good morning, Bethany. And you know what, that is great. We actually have the boys and the girls talking to each other voluntarily, which doesn't always happen, by the way. And just something that's common, there's no agenda, it's just, this is what we do this, okay? Also, one of the things that we started doing, and some other schools do this, a lot of schools do this, is we do a small group system for our school. And we have 5 rooms, I think this next year we're gonna have 4 rooms. And so I make up groups, where there's it could be a 10th or 11th or 12th grader, and a 7th grader, and a 4th grader, and a 1st grader in this group. And that is their group for the whole year. And they are, we make a little bit of a deal about it the first couple weeks of school. They get together and they decide that our group name will be this. And we have a theme generally. So this last year we did fish, so we had sailfish and piranhas and goblin sharks and stingrays and different things like that. And they make a poster about this particular creature, and they hang it in the hallway, and then they put all their birthdays on that and all their names. And then they're supposed to remember everybody's birthday in their group. Does that sound like a lot of work? It's not a lot of work for the teacher. It's a lot of work for them. It's not that much work. We use like 2 art periods and do that. And you know what? That has been overwhelmingly positive at our school. And the other thing that I have them do, this bit of culture that I've embedded, is that I want them to go and find each person in their group every morning and say good morning to them. And we've done different things too with that. But this last year in particular, I said, hey, I want you to go find them and shake their hand. So that's just funny. I mean, it's not just funny. It's great. But it is interesting to see a first grader, and usually it's the older ones chasing down the younger ones. It's like, hey, Tyler, good morning. Quickly. But that tiny little bit of forced courtesy has had a really positive effect on our school. And they start to see these little people as actual people, not just annoying little noisy people that are taking up space in the volleyball court or whatever. That's a really helpful thing. The other thing, like I mentioned, is I like if they remember their birthdays too. And then they will tell me, hey, Daisy is having a birthday today. And one of the customs that we have is we'll march into their room sometime during the day and just surround the desk and sing our own little version of happy birthday to them that we do, we made up. And they love it. They will pretend that they don't. They're scared about this happy birthday, but they sit there at their desk and they really, really love it. So things like that, where we actually try to show courtesy to everybody. You can do that all different ways. This is just one of the ways we do it. I've also found it helpful to try to enlist older students with a student who is struggling. So particularly with girls. I've noticed that girls 7th to the 8th grade often kind of shy. They're not quite sure who they are yet. And different times I've had a 12th grade girl who just a little bit more settled, confident, and if I can ask her, hey, you know what? This girl here, we'll just use Daisy, she's a little bit uncertain, and I would love to see you just kind of come alongside her, be her buddy, and just help her. Like help her do her phys ed, things like that. And I have never been disappointed by the results of those little team building things. Teamwork makes the dream work, right? Okay, we also do recess together. I'm gonna roll on here. I think it helps also to talk about it when there are situations that happen where there's conflict. Ask the students, that didn't go so well. What would you do differently next time? Things like that. Music, too. I think Ryan is going to talk to us about music, I believe. Right? Yeah. So, music is mandatory in a good school culture. If the word mandatory makes you break out in hives, I can use the word indispensable. It is so important in a good school culture. It builds character to sing together, to work together, to blend together. It's a collaborative effort. And it's a laying down of self. You know, it takes courage to sing with expression. It really does. I love to see our schools doing that. It's one of the most emotionally expressive and restorative things we do. And when we're scared to do it, what we'll tend to do is just we'll consume other people's music. That they're doing the work for us and we can be scared people here and not be expressive. Which, as Anabaptists, I think we have room to grow in that a little bit. Okay. And six, I like to use sports, and sports or recess. I would venture to say that every great school has a good recess or sports culture where participation is expected and looked forward to. I'm not speaking of professionalism or cheerleading or that scene at all, but I'm thinking of active participation by both students and teachers. Good sportsmanship is such a critical skill, and I think it's best caught and taught on the playground. I think it's foundational to learning to relate well to each other. You know, this is the place in school where we actively go out and put our students in conflict with each other. Deliberately do that. Create conflict. And we expect good things from that. And there are good things that come from that. And we could talk a lot about that, but just understand, I think that's really important. The last one here, and I forgot, I didn't have this on your outline, but school really, really needs to be a safe place. And there are so many sad stories of molestation, of things happening in the boys' bathroom, and just really sad things. You need to be aware that that's a possibility, I guess, and put guard rails in place. Some schools do things like the door is always open. I was astonished when I went to a school, a huge school, and they have an open door policy that they don't close the doors. So there's no talking and there's no fraternizing in the bathroom. It's just, so you can do different things, I'm saying, but school needs to be a safe place. I talked about danger. This is not acceptable danger to go into. There are some things, danger is good for us to experience some kinds of danger. Lots of things that we do involve it. And we enjoy that part. So don't forget the staff room too, the way we treat the other teachers. I think I mentioned that a little bit. Very, very important. gossip spreads faster than flu season in second grade among the teachers, if there's any conflict with the teachers. I've had some stories there too, but I'm not gonna tell any, so that's good. So the legacy you leave, as you think about it, at the end of the day, test scores will fade and trends change and apps come and go, but the way you make a child feel, that sticks. You know, we talked at the beginning about learning to ride a bike. There's a saying about learning to ride a bike. Do you know what it is?
Once you learn, you never forget.
That's it. You never forget how to ride a bike. And I think the same is true about the character things that you learn in school, about development of character. You didn't even understand that you were doing it, but they stick with you for life. You might be the reason that a student or an adult apologizes to another person when they're wrong, or holds back from bullying something, or learns to forgive themselves. So, let's keep building schools of character, because in the end, you know, their vivacious youth and good looks and amazing volleyball skills may win them a girlfriend or boyfriend, but it really takes character to make a beautiful marriage, which is the point. And their math and algebra and computing skills may win them a good job, but in the end, it's character that helps them keep it. So thank you for your attention.